The Future of Teamwork is a Leader production. Subscribe today and never miss an episode.
What are the outcomes that we actually care about? And when we're not clear about that, what we tend to default for is what makes my life easier? What will make it so that I hate my job less?
Welcome to the Future of Teamwork podcast. My name's Dane Grunewald, and today I'm joined by Sam Sperlin. Sam is an organizational design advisor, and he and I met at a cool dinner put on ahead of the Responsive conference up in Oakland back in September by Craig and William, I think, at Culture C. So it was a cool conversation we had, and I'm excited to dive into it a little bit more today, Sam. So welcome to the show.
Yeah, thanks. Thanks for having me. I always love talking about this stuff. And yeah, I feel like it'll be a continuation of just the dinner conversation. Less delicious food in front of me at the moment, but somehow that probably will make me more focused. Better for everybody that way.
I think my ADHD also allows me to be more focused here than in a dinner room where I'm distracted by other people's conversations. So tell us a little bit more about you. Like, how did you come to be in this field of work, and what's been sort of driving energy and excitement for you?
Sure. So I originally went to school to be a teacher. I taught high school government and economics for about 2 years before deciding that it wasn't going to be my long-term career, and kind of rolled the dice on a new plan, which was going to graduate school for positive organizational psychology, which is, you know, positive psychology being the kind of deliberate exploration of all of the positive psychological experiences of being a human being. So things like happiness and flow, meaning, those sorts of things. And the fact that it was organizational psychology meant kind of applying that to an organizational context. Through that work, I eventually, through a roundabout way, kind of got interested in this burgeoning field of organization design, organizational change, that sort of work. And for 10 years, I worked at a company called The Ready, which started in 2015 back in New York. And we were partially ourselves a future of lab, future of work lab, in the sense that we were a self-managing organization. And then we would do consulting work with organizations who were trying to essentially get out of their own way. So a lot of trying to help very bureaucratic organizations strip some of that bureaucracy out and make themselves more adaptive and more able to exist in a world that was constantly changing around them. So teaming was always a large part of that, but also other aspects of work, you know, workflow and meetings and structure and purpose and mastery. These types of things is what I've been working on. And I stepped away from The Ready at the end of October, and you know, since then have been, you know, doing a bit of my own stuff as well as just exploring what I might do next.
Brilliant. I know when we were sitting there having that dinner conversation, I was throwing out the term distributed leadership organization, which I think Peter Lafter, who'd been on the show, had shared with us. And you were talking about holacracy, and now you've just mentioned, you know, a self-managed organization. Like, can you cast a little bit more light on those and how you were experiencing that actually as a key member of The Ready?
Yeah, absolutely. So I think holacracy is probably the best known, maybe best branded kind of flavor of self-management. Another one would be sociocracy. But basically this idea of an organization that has an operating system built around the idea that we're not going to use a traditional hierarchy, kind of a traditional org chart, but instead have these nested teams, these nested circles that have specific domains and specific authority and specific decision rights, and then very participatory mechanisms for making decisions about things. So at The Ready, because we were a bunch of org nerds, we couldn't just, of course, you know, do anything by the book. So we kind of rolled our own version of holacracy and sociocracy, which really looked, like nested circles that had, leaders, elected in those circles and would represent their circles in different sorts of arenas. But really, we conceptualized leadership at The Ready as this distributed thing, as this emergent thing, where there were certain moments, certain environments where it would make sense for somebody to step into a leadership role, regardless of tenure or, you know, any sort of positional power that they may or may not have in the organization. And we tried to really build a system where that was the norm. And we weren't just always looking to the same folks to step into leadership positions all the time.
Yeah, that's neat. Having worked in the oil and gas industry, I've seen some of this emerge around safety in hazardous environments. And we had Admiral John Richardson at our Healthy Team Summit talking about in the Navy, particularly in a nuclear submarine, that a very junior member of the team could be given the decision rights or the authority to call, hey, we've got to stop here if they see something
totally
higher ups can't see. So are they good examples of what you're getting at there?
I mean, I think so. I think that to me is it's a flavor of that where like everybody feels safe to essentially be a disruption because something that we care about more, in this case, safety, is at risk. I think at the ready, we weren't really dealing with nuclear weapons all so much or at all. So it was less about like, hey, this is really unsafe. I mean, we're all sitting in front of computers basically all day long. So we're not really facing that sort of like physical danger, but more so about, contributing to all the other aspects of strategy and product development and how we do the work, and especially in kind of client delivery teams, which tended to be very small, often two or three people. There wasn't a whole lot of room for hierarchy in that. Like there, we would do a lot, and this probably is a good entry into teaming conversations. We do a lot around getting clear on like, what are the roles that we're playing, even on this very small team of just two or three people, even though there's only two or three of us, there may be 10 different roles that we can articulate that are important to the work. And like, let's be really clear about it. Like, I've got these three roles, and which means that I have kind of these decision rights, and you have these roles, which have these decision rights. And that allows us to run smoother and faster because we're not constantly relitigating those things. We are regularly checking in and seeing if we need to adjust those based on like how the work is actually going. Oh, I actually have this role. It makes so much more sense for you to have it. Why don't you take it for the next 6 weeks? Which then, the accompanying decision rights go along with the role. And now you kind of make the calls on those things. So try to have this really fluid but explicit approach to how we build and run teams.
Very cool. And that sounds both wonderful and potentially very messy. Having worked in some teams before where they're constantly jumping into different roles and looking at who's responsible for what. So in order to create that sort of clarity, you talked about building some mechanisms. Like, how does documentation or meeting etiquette play out to support that sort of freedom of the team?
The main thing that comes to mind is that it wouldn't be a free-for-all that's just always changing at all times. It would basically be, we would have a retrospective rhythm that was roughly monthly every 6 weeks. And that was the time where we look at the operating system of the team and make decisions about how we might want to change roles or responsibilities or any of those things. And then we would lock those in for the next batch of time. And we'd just run with those decisions that we made, taking note of like where things are not as great as they could be, knowing that we have another retro coming down the road in a couple of weeks. That'll be the time to readdress those things, assuming they're not complete showstoppers, which rarely they are. And then we can make the tweaks that we need to make. So that way you're containing the chaos into kind of designed moments, and then just running with those decisions in the in-between.
That's interesting. When you say design moments, so let's say you are shifting decision rights from and role from one person to another. Is that something that you're like, let's do it and let's meet up about it later, or let's do it and let's do it right now in the meeting? Like, is it in that moment that you make the shift?
I think it would probably depend on how big of a change are we talking about here. In most cases, we're talking about little tweaks. So we look at our team charter that we have literally written down in a document, and we've always talked about it as a living document. And what that means is that we're going to hop into that document during the retro and make changes along the way that we can agree to. And again, we're talking about teams of two or three here, so it's pretty straightforward. I think sometimes you come out of a retro and it's like, oh, there's a more fundamental thing here. I'm gonna take a next action to like go think about this, and I'm gonna make a proposal back to us at a later time. and we'll process that proposal later. That would happen if there's like a bigger thing that we want to work through, or we want to like more carefully think about what's the right thing that we want to commit to for the next period of time. I think it's fine to have someone go and take, just be really clear in the retro, who's going to go take the first draft at a proposal and bring it back to the team.
Yeah, got you. So that takes my mind, Sam, to like, if I'm delivering a piece of work for a customer, external or internal, and right now I'm using this given technology, and we decide, hey, the technology is not quite giving us what we need, we're going to shift technology. You can't make that decision right then and there in the spot. So I guess that might be one that you say, let's go and process over the next 2 weeks what platform we might shift to build this on, so that it's landing better with the team that we're serving.
Yeah, and I can imagine there being things like that where you might want to get some advice from other folks who are not on the team, because maybe it has implications beyond just the confines of the team. And that's, yeah, I think, a useful thing for a team to get a better sense of, like, what are the things that are just purely within our domain? Like, we can decide how we do this and it doesn't affect anyone else. It's the things like how we run our meetings, what's our operating rhythm, like what tools do we use just with each other? Like, that's all stuff that you shouldn't need to go get any sort of approval for necessarily, as long as you're like within normal constraints on like security stuff or like approved tools, whatever that is. But things about like how we interact with other teams or things that we create that others consume, there may be some more due diligence or some more perspectives to go get before we just decide, you know, maybe we want to make a decision that actually makes our lives easier, but it makes somebody else's life much harder. Well, then that's an interesting moment, right? Which is like, what are we optimizing for? And we always tried to be really clear, like, what are the outcomes that we're actually trying to create? And sometimes the outcome that we actually are trying to create means that we have to do the harder thing on the team. Like, there's a version that would be easier for us to do, but it would make it harder to actually achieve the outcome. Like, we are deciding to take on the added complexity or the added pain in the assness to do something because it's better for the project or better for the organization as a whole. So we're not just always optimizing for our local teams, which can, if everybody is doing that in all things all the time, you're back to the chaos that you were talking about.
Yeah, definitely. Like, having run some consulting businesses, it makes me think about like business development pipelines or project resource allocation tools. Like, you might be working in Excel, which the finance team are really clean on. And then you shift to a HubSpot or to a, you know, professional services tool. And then all of a sudden the data's showing up in a different way for a different department. You guys are stoked because it's way more seamless than punching stuff into an Excel sheet. But you've just totally disrupted the finance team on how they actually bill and forecast cash flow.
Right. And maybe that's okay. And maybe, you know, there are some tweaks that they can make that, you know, make it worth it. But that is where I think the interesting thing about teaming in organizations in general, it's, well, what are we doing this for? Like, what are the outcomes that we actually care about? And when we're not clear about that, what we tend to default for is, what makes my life easier? What will make it so that I hate my job less? And that is not really what you want people thinking about when deciding trade-offs in terms of like how we're actually going to work. So that's why, you know, in the work that the Ready does, we're very cognizant of like, what's the purpose of this team? What's the purpose of this organization? And let's make sure we're always coming back to that so that we're not optimizing for just whatever is going to get somebody off my back.
Yeah. That makes a lot of sense. I love tying the context and purpose to all things because it builds a consistency and a rhythm for the team too. It creates a common framework, common language, so that when they see something the next time, they're like, oh yeah, this isn't going to serve that objective or outcome.
Totally. And it doesn't solve all problems. It's not like having a super clear purpose, like, cuts through every decision. But if you do have an actual practice of considering that and literally looking at the words for what's the purpose of this organization, what's the purpose of this team, what's the outcome that we actually care about, and at least you have to force yourself to like look at it and read it and talk about it and think about it, it does start to influence those sorts of decisions. And sometimes it doesn't, which is fine. Like, we're not looking for 100% we're not looking to stick to it 100% because I think that's unreasonable and impossible. But in general, does it help? Does it serve as like a bit of an anchor or a magnet that directs our attention in useful ways? And in a self-managing organization, that becomes even more important because there are fewer kind of official structures and guardrails to keep us all going in the same direction.
Yeah. The team charter. So do you have a templated team charter? So each time a new team spins up, they know what they've got to fill out, or is it a little bit more organic than that?
We've done both. It's kind of like in between those. Like we had always a default charter, and sometimes it would feel too heavy for something that's kind of small. So we would, lose aspects of it. And like something that's really small with a bunch of org design nerds, I think sometimes we would just kind of do it verbally and like take some notes. But I think generally outcomes were better when we forced ourselves to actually use the template and do most of the fields in it and actually have the conversations and actually write it down, even when it felt tedious and like we shouldn't have to do it.
Yeah. Here's the $1 million extension question on that. Do you see AI playing a role in both the formation of these team charters and the compliance with, as AI is sitting in more of our meetings and digesting the work that we're doing?
I haven't thought about it, but my initial thought on both is absolutely, and I'm actually kind of excited by that idea. I think on the creation of it, I think an AI that is aware of the work that the organization does and the type of team that this is and why it's being called together could probably get a 60 to 80% draft of the charter filled out on its own. And then we spend our time tweaking and adjusting that first draft together, which I think often is, we would often do a version of that where somebody would bring a first draft of the charter to our first meeting, and then we would look at it together. There's no reason that has to be a person. I think a reasonably capable AI could probably do that. And then the humans on the team really kind of interrogate that information and lock it in and kind of commit to it. And then I love the idea on the other side where like you have an AI that's just kind of checking in like, hey, in your team charter, you all said this was going to be your operating rhythm and you haven't had a retro. You've missed two retros in a row. Like what's up with that? Like, do you want to adjust the charter? Do you want to like actually do the thing you said you were going to do? Those sorts of things would be pretty cool.
It would be cool. I'm actually using a bunch of different AIs right now in this space. One of them, just to give a big plug, Alexi Dunaway over at Pinnacle, he's got this AI called Pascal, which we're just launching, and it will sit in the meeting like this of ours, and we can load up a team charter. We can load up, some company values. We can even load up some of the work that we're delivering, the work products into it. And then it'll sit in our meeting, and then I can privately go and ask Pascal, hey, Pascal, how am I staying on track with my deliverables here, per the charter? And what did you perceive of the conversation Sam and I just had? Was there confusion here on whose decision right that was? So my guess is that kind of thing's not far away. The question's going to be who's going to be comfortable, because there's that big brother worry that if you've got someone AI sitting in all your meetings. And then the second question is, who's going to be mature enough, going back to your great point, that it's 60 to 80% to say, well, AI might have just given me, Pascal may have just told me what I wanted to hear based on how I've been training it. And actually they might be pointing out the wrong problem for me to solve with Sam rather than the right problem. So I think there's probably going to be some human hands-on requirement.
I mean, absolutely. And it makes me think, I've been on teams at the ready and other places where one of the roles that we articulated for the team was basically like, I don't remember what title we would give it, but it would be like something like the rules are, or like, or like the buzzkill. Like I hold this role on this team, which is very small, like a 5% effort role, which is basically checking us against the things that we said we were going to do. And we've all decided ahead of time that I have been given that power to essentially be like, hey, everyone, we're doing a job at the thing that we said we wanted to do. Just wanted to like make us aware of that. And at that point, you're not being kind of, you're not telling on the team. Like the team has already decided, like, we need somebody to hold us to this. And we, you know, often it would be a rotating role because it's not a fun role to necessarily hold. So we'd take turns doing it. And I think, you know, an AI would probably be even better at that. I think the interesting thing is part of what makes the role work when it's a human is that generally, you know, have good relationships with people and they're like, oh, like we're disappointing Sam. Like we should like actually do this. Whereas do you give it if you disappoint an AI?
I don't know.
Maybe not so much. Maybe probably it needs not. A more mature team to like hear that information and know that it's coming from an AI, but still find it valuable to do something with.
The caring piece is a great one to double click on. I think that is very real. It's like the parent that doesn't even have to raise their voice to get a child to really engage.
I'm not mad. I'm just disappointed.
Yeah, exactly. And the other thing that kind of pops for me is that I have had with some, you know, dear friends, colleagues and other people, some really interesting aversions to what the AI says. And it's like, well, I'm not even going to give that a minute of thought because how does the AI know? And so I think as a team, you need to build a little bit of fluency with, you know, this is how the AI is learning. This is where it may be right, wrong, or misled. So let's keep thinking of it as an artifact rather than as like a referee.
Yeah, I like that. I've also been playing with giving the AI like a specific perspective to represent. And then when it represents that perspective, we can be like, yeah, of course it's saying things in this realm because like we told it to. And it's not just like, we're not just treating it like a full-on human that's just like bringing all of his experiences and feelings to the table and like giving us a thing. Like, yeah, an AI will pretend to do that. It will tell you stuff. Like an AI will never just be like, I don't know. So I think being explicit about what role I want you to play, because this role is valuable because either we're missing a perspective on the team and you're going to fill that role for us. Like that, I think makes us better. If you can actually fill some sort of experience or skill set or specific thing that we don't have, then the information you're giving us, I think, becomes a little bit more credible and more immediately useful to us too, if we've asked you the AI to do that.
That's a cool one. I hadn't thought about that, Sam. So if I've got a team working on a project and we know that the three of us are very like human relationship focused and creative, but we're not brilliant at the details. And so we're likely going to spin up on energy to build new stuff and really please people and not be pragmatic on what can be done in the next 6 weeks. I wonder if you can kind of have an AI in there that's saying, I'm guessing my level of effort for you guys to achieve this is X hours and you guys probably don't have that allocated to the project, or here's a critical path item or something like that.
That seems completely reasonable to me. Another version of that I think would be interesting is that teams and organizations are always talking about like, we want to stay close to the customer. Like we're talking to the customer all the time. And most of them are absolute shit at that. And partially because sometimes it's a pain in the ass to find actual customers to talk to.
Yeah.
And you wouldn't have an actual customer in your most like mundane kind of recurring meeting. Like what customer is going to do that for you? But if you have an AI tool that really understands what you do and your customers and the things they tend to care about, can you get a reasonable facsimile of a customer to show up in your meeting and voice some of the things that, you know, wouldn't be perfect? I'm sure an actual customer would give us some more surprising things, but I have to imagine it would be better than the lip service that we tend to play with the empty chair. Like, oh, this is the customer over here. I'm like, well, let's fill that empty chair with an AI that is a reasonable facsimile of that and see if it gives us anything useful.
I love that. We had Tina Ginaldo on the show. She talked a lot about interprofessional relationships in the world of healthcare. So think about a hospital environment, clinical environment. If you had they talk about putting the patient in the center of the room in the empty seat. Imagine if there's an AI patient as a customer and they're using language and it's pausing and saying, hey, Sam, don't talk about the disease in this way or the patient in that way because it's not very human. Like it could give you some really interesting coaching and tweaking along the way.
Yeah, no, I love that. Just one last one that just kind of came to mind too. And this is a use that I have found a lot of value in over the last few months, is that just asking an AI to give you feedback from the point of view of whoever cares about the thing that you're making or like the presentation that you're about to give to the CEO. I have never given like the AI version of that and then said, hey, like, what am I not thinking about that this person is going to ask me about from their role, and not had it give me something that was like, oh, shit.
That's
a really good point. Like, I don't know how I missed that, and I should think about that. And that's not the AI like telling me exactly like how to answer it. That is prompting a blind spot that I had in my own thinking. And now I'm going to go do that, and I'm going to be better prepared. My understanding of the thing that I'm trying to create or the message I'm trying to give is going to be better. And I think most teams could probably benefit from something like that too, if they have the time and the space to not just be focused on like, how do we get this thing out the door, but how do we actually make it a little bit better?
Yeah, absolutely. I like that one a lot. So shifting gears then, pre-show we were talking about these hyper-focused teams, these mission-based teams, which I think of like a Navy SEAL team when I look at that. You know,
sure.
Someone just drop into a whole set of new mission objectives and just execute. But I'm sure there's lots of others. And, you know, a trauma team in a surgery environment might be one as well.
Yeah.
As you think about that in these self-managed teams or even in the wider world of however anyone designs their organization, you talked about scaffolding, like creating the scaffolding so that these hyper-focused mission-based teams can just drop in and get to work, and they've got the guardrails, the tools to go. What's popping for you in that space? How are people thinking about that scaffolding?
Yeah, so we would always talk a lot about mission-based teams within not just self-managing teams, but actually especially kind of more traditional organizations. Because if you think about a large kind of traditional legacy organization, they're not known for having the most dynamic structures in the world and generally are slower to spin up an effort around a thing because we didn't plan for it and we don't have the budget set aside for it. So we got to wait until next quarter's planning before we can spin up a team to go explore this thing. And it's just plodding and slow. So when I talk about scaffolding, it's basically all of the other operating system stuff that needs to be true to be able to spin up a team to go do a thing. So a really small example is like a team charter and having an expectation and a good template and the we are expected to have a team charter and we know how to fill it out. We know how to have the conversations around the various aspects of it. And it's just a normal thing. The budget thing as well. We have a budgeting process where we have a pot of money set aside for unexpected things where we can spin up a team and resource them appropriately to go do something really specific and clear. Maybe it's explore a thing, maybe it's make a recommendation, maybe it's build an MVP. Could be lots of different versions of it, but you need to have some of the other things around it for that to even be possible. I mean, another one is how do we think about allocating people to, how do we think about allocating time of people in the organization? Is everybody basically have 100% of their time spread across 20 different things and nobody has any capacity to do something new? Well, if that is the case, then you're going to have a hard time spinning up an MBT to go do something that wasn't even on our radar a couple of days ago, but something happened in the market, something happened to the product, whatever, that made us want to go do a thing. So what does it look like to have the capacity planning and the allocation and just the philosophy around like how we actually staff people to work to have some slack built in to go do these things? So that's the type of stuff that I mean when I talk about scaffolding and kind of the OS to sustain the ability to do something interesting like a mission-based team.
Oh, I like that. The MBT acronym caught me though, because in Australia we have the RBT, which is the random breath test when you're driving home from the pub. They pull you in and you have to blow in the bag.
Yeah. a little bit different. A little bit different.
Yeah. That's right. That's cool. So the operating system, the scaffolding makes total sense. And I've totally been there before when, you know, something comes up. It may even be like a pro bono work in a consulting environment is very interesting too. Sure. It's very valuable to do, not just for the philanthropic benefit, but you know, the team gets inspired by going out and doing some of that work. You learn different things. And yet if the team's all like, you know, nose to the grindstone, flat out delivering on current projects, and you haven't created the slack in the organization for that, then you miss out, or you're stressing people out by putting more on their plate.
Right. Yeah. That's where I see this most commonly not work is people get really excited by the mission-based team idea, but have none of the other kind of scaffolding in place. So what it turns into is the usual suspects, which are the most high functioning, most capable people who will kind of kill themselves the most to get things done, get asked to go do these mission-based teams, and they say yes, and they just put more on their plate, and you just burn people out that way. I would not recommend getting really excited about MBTs and not have any of the other OS components in place, because it is basically just a recipe to burn out your most capable people as quickly as possible.
Yeah, that's a great point. And we've all seen that in the last 5 years post-pandemic. Like we threw so many of those people right into the hot seat of 7 different teams and projects.
Totally.
The other thing that actually comes to mind there, I've spoken to a number of guests about DEIB initiatives and the downside of some of these ERGs, because people are being pulled into an ERG to do what is very likely mission-based work for them. And yet their day-to-day functional manager is kind of frustrated that they're losing a team member to go and do this thing over here that they're not, attached to, or that's putting more pressure on the rest of the team. So the operating system, the scaffolding that you explained there, it's probably for anyone who's doing things like ERGs and or other initiatives in the business, it's also probably a good way not just to enable the team that's going to do the work, but to make sure that the teams they go back to have more context, more awareness of, what they're losing that person for.
Yeah, totally. I mean, if we think about why that manager may be frustrated, is that they are probably being held to some expectations around some KPIs or OKRs that are very important and will determine compensation and other things in their life. And a valuable resource, a valuable person who would be helping them achieve those things is off to go do something else. So I have a lot of empathy with folks who, from a casual reading of the situation, seem like they're just kind of like stamping their foot and being mad that somebody is like going off and doing something else. Well, they're in a system where that is actively kind of harming their ability to get their things done. And their boss is not necessarily going to understand the fact that your star player was off doing an MBT over here. Like, they're not going to care. Like, where are your numbers? And that's what I mean by, the larger kind of OS. If you have an OS that is like that, and everybody is kind of stretched to the limit and OKR'd to death, then what we're talking about with MBTs is about flexibility and the unknown and the unexpected. And you can't react to those things without the slack in the system to do that. Without slack, things just break. And then the breakage is covered by the glue of individual heroism, which is messy and not sustainable.
Correct. More burnout. It's interesting you bring up compensation there, Sam, too, because I've been studying under Ian McDonald on systems leadership and recently got accredited in that practice. And one of the things they look at there is their systems of compensation. And often we compensate based on KPIs and OKRs that aren't a complete inventory of the work that's being done, the contributions that are being made in service of the purpose. So have you ever seen examples of where a manager may have it as an OKR or may have it as something that's at least monitored, if not measured, of how many of their team members are contributing on these MBTs as we see more dynamic teaming in organizations?
I can't think of a specific example off the top of my head, but that would be an interesting sort of metric to be looking at. If you run a team where if we spin up MBTs based on who is most capable and able to work on a thing, and those keep coming out of the same part of the organization or reporting to the same manager, I would imagine that looks actually quite good for that person. Like, you are developing people who are capable of going off and leading a thing. That is interesting signal that I don't know exactly what I would necessarily do with it, but I would want to be aware of it and not just to have the story be like, oh, you're missing your numbers because all your people are off working on MBTs. Well, what is it about the fact that all these people are coming from your group? Is it just random? Is it that you are cultivating some like really good leaders who are in demand from the rest of the organization? That's the more nuanced take that I would hope folks are taking in that sort of situation.
That's neat. It sounds like we've obviously always heard about matrixed organizations, but it's almost like a matrixed compensation recognition model. When I was playing blockchain, we looked at that too. We were like, I wonder if you could attribute value that people are delivering on a project to the time that they spent in another team or under a different leader and follow their journey.
There are definitely some interesting ideas in the compensation world. One that comes, I think, from the Web3 blockchain, this group, I assume they still exist, Coordinate, which the basic idea is like you're given, everybody in the org is given 100 tokens and asked to allocate those tokens to the people who, whatever criteria you're going to use. Generally, it's like, contributed the most value to the organization. Obviously, like there's lots of interesting challenges with that. Does it turn into like a popularity contest?
What
is the actual thing? How, if you don't have visibility, but there are like, that's an interesting idea about kind of getting a sense of like, where is the actual value being created in an organization? The other thing that I think about with compensation in the realm of teaming is that I find people don't really argue the fact that the team is kind of the fundamental unit of value creation in the vast majority of organizations. And yet there are so many individual compensation approaches. And we seem to default to the idea that your bonus, your variable comp is an individual sort of thing, even though you are embedded in a system of teams that will determine whether or not you are successful as an individual. So I generally take a pretty dim view of incredibly individualized compensation approaches in a reasonably large organization.
Yeah, I'm fully with you on that. I think it's a good one. And you're right on that Web3 blockchain approach. We did pilot, not Coordinates, but we did pilot a system back in COVID. And what we did find was teams were allocating the points and tokens to people they had empathy for, people they liked. Someone had a big trip coming up and they were like, let's throw some points at that person because they got more spending money for that for their summer vacation. So it gets
totally gamed. In one point of view, that's gamed. And but also, if I wanted to like be really provocative, like what is so bad about having an aspect of variable compensation that maybe takes in consideration some of these more subjective things? Maybe it doesn't scale super great, but like, I don't know. I think there are worse things in the world than we throw somebody else an extra $150 this month in comp because we know they got a thing coming up or they like hit a real rough patch or something.
Yeah.
Like, I don't know. There's something human about that that is interesting to me.
Yeah, you're absolutely onto something there. I haven't thought about it like that. I once had a friend, I was coaching baseball and he was going through a really tough time. And, people are proud. They're not going to accept charity. But he came to a baseball game and he was like, has anyone got some work for me to do? And I was like, yeah, absolutely. We can throw some work at you. And we came up with something to do. And that was actually a really interesting moment of like appreciating each other, creating a bit of mattering in the context of that. Helping out and they're down.
Yeah, I think there's, like with almost anything in organizations, I think there's a lot of like basic stuff to be done that has been best practice for a long time. We don't really think about it all that much, and interesting experiments that are worth doing that seem kind of counterintuitive or strange, but generally are not particularly risky if you design it to not be, and worth trying out.
Yeah. And it does tie me back. I had Max Guinness on the show to talk about universal basic income a couple of years ago. And he said, often when they put UBI, particularly in some communities in Africa, it all finds its way to the people who are creating the value in that economy. Mm-hmm. It's not, popularity doesn't win in the long run. So maybe,
interesting.
Maybe people have got to just stick with it a little bit to get through the behavioral change if they're ever experimenting.
Yeah, that's cool.
So my last question or theme was these, in your words, these kind of like 60-minute teams, people that band together literally for a meeting and then they disband. And there's a lot of talk out there about meeting effectiveness. But it is interesting. You know, there's a problem that needs to be solved right now. Let's do a pre-read. Let's workshop it. And let's actually solve it in 60 minutes. What's your view there on how that's evolving in the future?
I think if I can zoom it one step back, I think the interesting thing about, and this was literally a thought that I just had basically preparing for this conversation, is playing with the idea of a team. Like, I know there are various definitions of teams out there, and we spend a lot of time talking about mission-based teams, which, you know, generally relatively time-constrained. In our parlance, a couple of weeks usually, very clear mission, like you're going to go do something. But I think on the kind of more nebulous, more amorphous end, the idea of like thinking about your whole organization as a team or your department or your function as a team, where you have certain responsibilities, but you're not necessarily working with them day to day. I think that is an interesting thing to think about. Like, what does it mean to be a good team member in this really amorphous 150 person quote unquote team? And then just following that all the way down to the micro, which is like, what is the potentially the most, the smallest, most frequent team that we experience? It's like, well, who is on this call together right now? Are we not sort of a team? Like, we're here for a reason. We have to work together, even if the thing that we are trying to accomplish is just getting to the end of this meeting and like not hating each other. Like, sure, like there are worse goals to shoot for. And I think often, you know, a good meeting is just a microcosm of good teaming behaviors. Like, if there's a certain amount of trust, a certain amount of structure that we can rely on to like how we are going to be together and what sort of behavior is expected, and we're able to represent our points of view and feel heard. Like, that's what I want in a good mission-based team where I'm working with you for weeks. And it's what I want from a 45-minute meeting that I have to be on and that you have to be on. And do we gain anything by thinking about that as like a very short team that we get a chance to like try to form and do our thing together and then disband at the end of the call? I don't know. Yeah. It's just like, I think there's a lot of nuance in the idea of teams. And I think there's value in just kind of thinking about the different flavors of it.
Yeah. And I like the way you position that the work and the team may simply be coming together to understand how to remove a friction or to how to build some more trust or cohesion around other work. That's really interesting.
Yeah. I think the reason I was thinking about this is I found myself kind of reflecting on like my time at the Ready, you know, at our largest 50 some folks. And the whole organization felt like a team in some way, but my role in like that version of the team was more like, how do I show up in our Slack? How do I show up in our very rare kind of full team moments? And when I was on top of my game, I was actively thinking about that and doing things that wouldn't necessarily just come to mind naturally to contribute in that way, which is like a very lightweight kind of good citizenship behavior that is easy to ignore. And when I wasn't on top of my game, I wouldn't be thinking about that at all. I would not conceptualize the larger organization as my team, and I would miss opportunities to help us move and toward our purpose and toward what we were actually trying to do.
I love that you brought up using the Slack channel to participate.
Yeah, we've used both definitions of the word Slack, the tool and like the idea of like not over planning yourself.
But I also wonder if there's something there. Like, when I hear you say it, Sam, I'm like, if I create in my 20-something, 50-something organization, the Slack for the team to have to go and be thinking about how they're serving the greater purpose, how they're showing up on the Slack channel or in a core team meeting, or how they're just pausing and reviewing something that's happened in the past. I wonder if that actually brings a little bit more energy and opportunity in from the fringes of the organization.
I mean, I think it has to. And, you know, that idea of having a retrospective rhythm, you know, is a type of Slack, you know,
yeah.
Can we, and it's really the, like, it's such a small ask, like every 6 weeks, can we set aside 60 minutes to just talk about like how things are going? And yeah. In some organizations that we've worked with, it's like, I asked for the world. They're like, what? Like, you want us to do what? I'm like, well, this is basically the bare minimum of introducing some sort of self-reflection into an organization, which is a non-negotiable if you want to actually get better. So yeah. I think there is something really powerful in deliberately building Slack into an organization or a team, so that you can do some of that cognitive overhead work that just gets pushed to the edge and ignored if you don't have the time and space to do it.
Yeah.
I mean, it's like doing maintenance on something. Like, yeah, you could never take your car to get worked on because you're too busy driving it. And eventually you're going to have a bad time much sooner than you would have otherwise.
Yeah. Oh, that's a great analogy. I love that. Well, we've covered some really cool stuff from very early on when we were talking about holacracy, sociocracy, making it safe to be a disruption. I really like that soundbite. That was really cool. And that, if for anyone who's like maybe getting a bit caught up on like all the scaffolding that we also went on to talk about, that's a very clean, crisp goal. Like you just shared now, when we talked about retrospective rhythm, having the team charter, I like that visualization of, hey, there's three of us on the team, but there are 10 roles. How are we allocating role decision rights? That's super crisp. And then as we moved into this whole concept of mission-based teams, and that was the detailed scaffolding, creating the budget, creating the time allocations, the charter mechanics, I think most leaders right now have to be thinking about their organizations shifting into this dynamic teaming mode. We're already doing it, but so let's actually be a bit more intentional about it. So I love that you bring that kind of focus there. And just diving into roles that AI can play, you know, whether it's bringing in that buzzkill role or the seat of the customer, helping you build out a team charter. I think there's just so much in this space that's fascinating. If any of our listeners want to find out more about you, Sam, the work you're doing, the research that you're paying attention to, how do they best connect with you?
Yeah, a couple of quick ways. So I co-host the Ready's podcast still, even though I no longer work there. So it's called At Work with the Ready, and I do it with my co-host Rodney Evans, who is the CEO of the Ready. I'm more active than I want to be on LinkedIn, so find me there, and I'm posting a couple times a week generally. And then samsperlin.com has links to some various things, a newsletter and some other stuff. So those would be the places.
Awesome. And any conferences, speaking events soon?
Nothing yet, but if you're running something and you want a speaker, get after me. I'd be happy to do it.
Love it. All right. Thanks.
Cool. Thanks for having me. I really appreciate it.
You bet. So, Dr. Alicia, how was that? Folks, this is my producer, Dr. Alicia McCraw.
Hi, everyone. I thought that was a really instructive conversation, Dane. I'll be sure to put a number of resources in the show notes. I especially liked when y'all talked about mission-based teams and the scaffolding organizations need to support dynamic teaming without burnout. It connects nicely with a few other episodes we've done on team design, distributed leadership, and organizational operating systems, so I'll link those for listeners who want to go deeper. I'm also going to put up links to Sam's work in writing, the Ready podcast, and any tools and frameworks discussed around team charters and retrospectives. We'll include a full transcript, a short summary of my key takeaways, and links to you and Sam so that people can continue the conversation if they wish. All of that will be in the show notes.
Perfect. I can't think of anything else, can you?
Only to let our listeners know that we always love to learn about what's important to you. So feel free to drop us a note on LinkedIn on any topic you'd like for us to cover. Plus, if you haven't already done so, please subscribe and rate our show. Every 5-star rating helps us connect with listeners like you.
Love it. Well, Dr. Alicia, I think that just about does it for today. I want to remind everyone that leadership isn't about having all the answers, and it's not even about the role of a leader. All of us can know when it's the right time to be asking questions, when it's the right time to challenge the status quo, and more importantly, when to ask for specialist advice or assistance. So thanks again for your help today, Dr. Alicia, and thanks again for joining us, everyone. We'll see you next time.
Just a quick note before we go. The views and opinions shared in this episode are those of our guests and do not necessarily reflect the views of the host, Dane Gruneveld, the Leader Group, our patron Huddle 3, or our partners and affiliates. Any scenarios discussed are for the purpose of fueling creative thinking and conversation and should be viewed only in this context. Dane, Leader, our sponsors, partners, and affiliates do not endorse any guest or any organization they may be associated with. It's important to remember that every workplace is as individual as the people within it. Our recommendation is to always seek solutions that are specifically designed to help serve your team's unique needs. And to this point, please know we're here, ready to help you find the best way forward, no matter where your starting point is. You can connect with Dane or myself, Alicia McCraw, on LinkedIn or via the links contained in the show notes. Thanks again for tuning in. And hey, if you think someone in your network would benefit from this episode, feel free to share it or give us a 5-star rating. Those 5 little stars really help us reach more curious people like you. We'll catch you next time on the Future of Teamwork.